This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special.
Welcome to Profoundly Pointless. My name is Nick VinZant. Coming up in this episode, financial domination and car sounds.
Everyone has a different style. I'm less of a demanding type dominatrix and more of a, like, you want to do this for me because of XYZ. And I would describe most of the, like, financial domination scenes as less, like, planned than most other scenes, and more like sexy harassment. 2020 got real weird, let me tell you. People were really bored in 2020 and 2021.
I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, subscribe, leave us a rating or a review. We really appreciate it. It really helps us out. If you're a new listener, welcome to the show. If you're a longtime listener, thank you so much for all of your support. So our first guest is a dominatrix who specializes in a certain kind of domination. This is financial dominatrix Ruby on Rails. What is financial domination?
It sort of depends on who you ask, but it's dominating someone financially. Like, it's either taking direct control of their finances or having them buy you shit.
Like, how much money are we talking, I guess?
Some people only spend, like, $5 at a time. Some people spend thousands.
What would you say would kind of be the average? Like, if you looked at your average client, okay, they're going to probably be spending this much.
Financial domination is not really, like, charging, if that makes sense. Because the whole gravitas behind it is that you are not charging for a service. Somebody is willingly giving you something, or you are engaging in some sort of, like, mental domination where, like, they feel force is the wrong word, but they feel inclined to do something for you.
They're either giving it to you or, like, you're demanding it.
Everyone has a different style. I'm less of a demanding type dominatrix and more of a, like, you want to do this for me because of XYZ.
So what's the appeal?
A lot of the people that I play with, it's a rush to do it. I mean, if you've ever gone shopping and spent, you know, a certain amount of money, it's like a rush. A lot of people have a shopping addiction. And for a lot of people, it's really humiliating to give a woman money for something they wouldn't, you know, ordinarily have. Like, I have people who give me money to have fun that they're not having.
Does it go along with other kind of fetishes and kinks? Or is this kind of like, no, this is usually, they're just going to be into this? Or is this kind of come with, like, a whole bag, so to speak?
Every single person is different, but in my personal experience, it tends to go with other kinks. Like, humiliation is a really common one, so, and that takes all sorts of different flavors. Like, humiliation is just an umbrella. I would put forced buy in that category. Forced being an air quote.
Yeah, like, forced but not forced, right?
Yeah, like, oh, mistress, force me to do this thing I'm asking you to make me do. And, like, cuckolding is often in that, feminization, sometimes, you know, quote-unquote blackmail.
So is it sexual?
Not directly, no.
So how does this kind of ultimately work to where someone is doing their thing, so to speak?
Well, a lot of BDSM is like that, where it's very indirect, where like you're not necessarily doing something with, like by something, I mean something directly sexual with someone, like in a traditional sense, like a vanilla sense. And by that, I mean like, you know, intercourse, that kind of deal. Like you may be doing something that is completely unrelated and unrecognizable on the surface to someone who's vanilla as sexual at all. You're like, why would you give a woman money and find that hot? I don't understand. Why would you spend more money than is, you know, in your budget? That makes no sense. But I think what FinSubs find hot about that is that it wasn't necessarily something they planned on doing. It wasn't necessarily something they, quote unquote, wanted to do at the beginning. They felt like they had no control over the situation. They felt, you know, quote unquote, manipulated into it. And that is the part that they find sexy. And sometimes they feel like lesser than the woman, but they look up to her, if that makes sense. So, and in the end of that act, or like in the end of like, you know, an interaction, which sometimes can go on for like weeks, right? Then somewhere in the middle of that, they might
do their thing. Let's refer to it as doing their thing.
Do their thing is good. I like
that. So that would be the like what I kind of don't quite understand is like, okay, so if they're doing their thing, like what are they doing their thing to? The act of like giving you $10 or something like that, like they do it to that, or they're doing it to the idea that they're doing it to you? Like what are they doing their thing to, I guess would be the question.
The whole concept, it's the idea they're doing their thing to. I like how I'm just like
visual aid, a visual aid, right?
Oh yeah. Someone's gonna do their thing to that later. Because there are tons of videos of that, of women just doing this and saying, "You are gonna give me X amount of money for." Because I exist and you want to make me happy. And that's a whole genre of porn, just by the by. And that is a thing that people do their thing to. But some of the people that I play with like to be humiliated like that. But so to answer your question, what they're doing their thing to, lots of different things.
Lots of different things, but the whole thing at the same time. Like it's all an experience that kind of comes along with it.
I think it's being humiliated.
Would you say that kind of financial domination is fundamentally different than other kinds of domination?
Not necessarily. I think it's just more popular because a lot of, you know, more popular for women to try to get into. Because they saw it as like, oh, it's an opportunity for me to just make a social media account, post some hot pictures of myself, and then men will give me money. But it's much more nuanced than that. And I mean, like, if you just insult a guy on the internet and say, you know, give me, you know, money for my Starbucks, like it might happen. But financial domination is not as common a fetish for people to have as people think. The thing that makes it sometimes different is that oftentimes people will go too far with it. And then it will end up being sort of a destructive thing where like they will get themselves in trouble, like spending significantly too much. But that ends up also being a fetish, right? Like towing the line of like, is this actually a life problem for me?
How do you kind of, I guess, be responsible in that sense of like, okay, this person wants to give me $250, but they really can't afford it. Like, how do you kind of make sure that you're not taking real advantage of somebody? Like,
well, I think in some cases it's impossible to know unless you really know the person. And if you're just having a one-off interaction with someone online, it's really difficult to know, right? And that is kind of a matter of personal responsibility, yours and theirs, right? Like, if somebody is going around online interacting with any attractive woman and saying, like, please, mistress, let me give you $200, he's going to find someone who's going to take it. Right?
Yeah.
So, like, and the way that I interact with people, like, I try to not be pushy unless, like, it's a fun interaction. And at the end of the day, if someone is really, like, no hard stop, like, I just don't care. If I don't care, I mean, like, I'm not going to force somebody truly to do something that is bad for them.
Can you kind of get a sense if somebody's like, hey, man, this might be your last $500 or something like that? Can you kind of get a sense of that?
Not from a one-off interaction, right? Like, in some cases, certainly, yes. But, like, that's like, you know them face-to-face, right? Like, how can you tell over the internet? Like, from, like, a random Twitter account? There's no way to know.
Where do you kind of, like, are most of your clients then, is it a virtual thing or is it in person when you look at the financial domination?
Most financial domination stuff is online. So there's no way to know for sure.
If we were to kind of like look at a normal, or not normal, but in your average kind of client interaction, and if we need to like pretend I'm the client or whatever, like how does this usually go about? They contact you, what kind of, how does this work?
So some terminology, just basic BDSM terminology. In a scene, the person who's doing the things is usually called the top, and the person who's having the things done to them is usually called the bottom. A bottom is not necessarily a submissive, and the top is not necessarily dominant. In my case, I trend towards dominant in pretty much everything. But anyway, that aside, typically, like when I engage in financial domination scenes, they are like kind of playful. Like I will poke at some like fetish that someone has. Like, let's say someone like has a fetish for like cuckolding, right? I'll make some joke about like, oh, it would be so terrible if like you paid for me to go out on a date with my girlfriend. Like, it'd be awful if you did that. Like, I can just imagine all the fun things we might do. You'd be enabling us to do that. And depending on how they engage with me, I'll take it in a different route. Like, if they engage with that line of, that line of thought, then I'll continue with it. And if they're just like, no, that is not what I'm into today, like, mm-mm. Then I'll sort of try, you know, nipping away at something else. And I would describe most of the, like, financial domination scenes as less, like, planned than most other scenes, and more like sexy harassment, which is, I think, what a lot of people like about them, is that it is very unexpected. Kind of like when you get like a hot picture sent to you from someone that you're dating.
It's less kind of a thing that like we're going to do this between like 10 and 11 o'clock, and more kind of a thing like, yeah, I'm going to send you a message randomly throughout the day. Be like, pretty pay much for this coffee or something like that, kind of along those lines.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm less like pay for this coffee kind of girl, and more like I'm bored. I'm going to harass you and see if you'll buy my girlfriend a pair of shoes.
And then and then they'll usually, like, that's the thing then, right? Then they'll go ahead. How long will these kind of, if you were to take, like, an interaction with somebody from kind of start to beginning of that interaction, are we talking, like, one message, two message, three message, they're done? Or are we, like, do these things go on for a while? Or, like, what's the time frame?
Everyone is different. Sometimes it'll be like instantaneous, like, here you go, mistress, I bought the shoes. Or like, sometimes I'll have to chip away at it and it'll be like a couple of days, you know? And like, I don't mean like constant a couple of days. I mean like I'll send them a message every now and again. But it's usually, like, not that many by my standards. So, and I suspect that, like, if I really, truly cared, and, like, was deeply invested in it, if I, like, did more of the, like, video call and phone call nature, it would be way less interaction. But I find the messaging back and forth and, like, sexy harassment thing to be very entertaining.
Do you personally kind of enjoy it from a sexual aspect? Like, is this something that you're into, for lack of a better phrase? Or is this like, this is something that I do and I'm good at?
I mean, it's both. That's how I view all of the domination stuff, is like, it is sexy amusement. So I like when people do things for me. And like, one thing that I particularly like is when people, like, quote unquote, get more than they ask for. So it falls into that bucket, even if it's like, I don't know, I really just only intended to buy you one coffee and I bought you four.
Oh, but okay, I'm just going to ask you it. Like, did you ever do your thing to this, to like the interactions that you have?
Yeah. I mean, I've done that to like all sorts of different interactions. So
with
like things one wouldn't imagine, right? Like just from a vanilla standpoint, you're like, why would you do that? And it's less like the, for me, it's less about the, like, oh, somebody gave me money or bought me a thing, 'cause who cares? It's stuff. Right. And more about the, like, oh, you did that. That's funny.
I don't know what it says, but it says something. Like, I can't put my finger on exactly, like, the terminology of what it says, but, like, oh, I get what that kind of implies, right? Like, or I get where that – it's – you feel powerful.
Yeah, it's having somebody wrapped around your little finger to the point of where they will bend over backwards and, like, do something that they personally find really degrading and is also expensive. So, and that they then afterwards feel like regret for is fun and hot, right? So, and like, if they're truly like, I really can't afford this after the fact, I'm like, I don't care, whatever.
Have you ever had somebody ask for their money back?
From financial domination, no. I mean, in general, no. I think the whole thing about the financial domination thing and people getting in over their head is very similar to the thing about, submissives who enjoy pain and who like feeling the bruise and the sting and like showing off bruises, right? It's like a reminder of the experience, which is fascinating and not really a thing I understood at the very beginning. Like, if I spend too much, I'm like, that's a mistake, I'm not doing that again. Like, and I feel regretful. I don't feel shame about it. I just feel like an idiot.
Are you ready for some harder/listener-submitted questions?
Sure.
Is this in any way related to sugar dating?
I don't think so. I think that some sugar babies like to view it as similar. And I've seen in a lot of communities online a lot of discussion of some transition over. But in my opinion, no. Because it's not really financial domination if you aren't really dominating somebody.
Has anybody ever asked you to just take complete control of their finances?
Frequently, yes. It's interesting to see what people spend money on.
So when you like go over their taxes and stuff? Like, what are you doing when you get asked that?
Yeah, spreadsheets of expenses and stuff like that, and budgeting, honestly.
So what's, is that now, is that a, like a subgenre of it? Is that called something different, or is that, no, that just falls under?
That is a subgenre of financial domination, and I can't remember what it's called off the top of my head, but yeah, that is definitely like an established subgenre. With some people, that is a lot of overhead.
What will you, well, like in that kind of situation, like what will you be doing? You'll just, you manage their finances entirely?
I like to set people up with a plan personally. And usually I like to leave people in those situations where, like, if they do happen to overspend on financial domination, they're not left, like, destitute. So I've put people in situations where, like, they actually have, like, large amounts of savings afterwards that they're not allowed to touch.
And so you'd be, like, assigning, you can spend this much on this, this much on that. Like, how does that kind of...
I mean, like, you just help people make a realistic budget, right? And help people plan things out. And, like, it's also not that hard to look at how to consolidate debt, right? Like, if someone has a whole bunch of credit cards, the interest rates on those are astronomical. So... you can, I mean, depending on what other options you have, you can consolidate those just directly through, I mean, you could get a home equity line of credit if you own a house, or a different type of loan from your bank. There's a bunch of different options.
Oh, it sounds, that's what's fascinating to me. It sounds like you're doing, like, a really good job when you manage their finances.
Well, why would I do a bad job for someone that is serving me? That's stupid.
I guess I just kind of thought along the lines of, like, okay, I'm going to tell you what you can spend. I didn't think that you would be, like, telling them, hey, invest in a 401k or something like that.
Well, I do that too. Like, hey, you should open a savings account at, like, these places because they have great rates and great returns.
I don't know why I find that so interesting for some reason, that, like, being a good accountant. I thought it would be more just, like, along the sexual lines of, like, I'm going to manage your money.
I mean, personally, like, someone is of no use to me if they are, like, destitute, they've, you know, ruined their job, like, they have a huge amount of debt, and, like, they can't keep up with payments on anything. That's not useful to me. Like, they're way more useful to me if, like, they've sorted all that shit out and they're free of everything, right? And they have, like, a large amount of savings if they ever happen to make a frickin' mistake. Like, right? Stability is totally priceless.
Ain't that the truth? I think the reason that I had the reaction to it is because one of the first people we interviewed on the podcast was a dominatrix, and she had the best tax advice. And I use her accountant. I'd assumed you'd be like, you can spend $500 on food this month or whatever, not like, hey, you got to really... you gotta, you know, diversify your bonds or something like that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I use either Vanguard or, oh God, what is the other one? I use Wealthfront or Fidelity. Fidelity does not charge fees. I don't use the apps because they are, like, you know, the apps like Robinhood, because in case anything happens to be unstable, they kind of upset the market, if that makes sense. Like, your trades won't necessarily go through. I know a lot of people in finance and a lot of people in tech, so yeah.
What is your most frequent request?
My most frequent request is, mistress, do whatever you want to do. Whatever pleases you is honestly my most frequent request at this point in time. I used to get, like, when I was younger, I used to get very hyper-specific requests about, like, oh, I have this, like, XYZ fantasy, and, like, I don't know. A lot of my requests are, like, let's have a good time together, or, like, I don't know. Sometimes I get requests of, like, people wanting to learn something new, so I think it tends to fall into one of those two buckets.
Is there one that you would stand that stands out to you, or like an experience in the financial domination aspect that you would say that was either my most interesting or one that kind of jumps out at me? Like, I still remember this interaction with this person.
I'm trying to think back to like 2020, because 2020 was funny. 2020 got real weird, let me tell you. People were really bored in 2020 and 2021 because the market again was like up and people were just like lighting money on fire. So I ended up with a lot of things. Like, I recently discovered that, like, part of my Amazon wish list, I didn't set the settings right, so I kept getting multiples of everything. So I have, like, more Halloween costumes than a Spirit Halloween. Like, way more. Like, one person bought everything that was on there, and then there were multiples of everything else. So, like, it's insane. I mean, I, like, have someone who, and several people, actually, who, like, now have large amounts of savings as a result.
Of Utana taking over their accounts?
Yeah.
How much, like, how much money have you saved them, do you think, if you had to put a number on it?
Tens of thousands.
It kind of seems like people should just do this from a business standpoint, to be honest with you. Like, this isn't my thing, but I'm starting to be like, do you want to manage my finances? Like, it seems like you're doing a good job. Most amount of money somebody's ever given you at one time?
Not sure I want to say that on.
Can you say 3 figures, 4 figures, 5 figures, 6, 7? Can you put a figure on it?
Definitely not 7. I don't think 6 either.
What would you say? Like, kind of, what's the most frequent denomination? Are we talking like under 100, over 100? What are people?
Definitely over 100. Like, for financial denomination, it's usually, at least for me, over 5.
Are women interested in this?
Yeah, surprisingly. I mean, women are interested in everything, right? Like, anything a man is interested in, a woman is interested in, too. Like, that was not a thing I thought originally, and then I have a friend with a very strong foot fetish, which, like, was kind of eye-opening to me when I first interacted with her at a party, but that made me ruminate a bit on, you know, women having kinks.
But do you have clients who are women?
Mm-hmm. I have a lot of clients that are women.
If you had to put a percentage on it, are we talking like 70% men, 30% women, 60-40? What do you think it would be?
I'd say it's probably more like 90-10.
That's still more than I would have thought it would be.
Yeah, but it definitely comes in waves where, like, I'll go a bit without seeing women and then, like, my entire schedule is women.
What would you say makes someone a good financial dominatrix?
I mean, I think what makes anyone a good dominatrix actually is having compassion and being able to put yourself in someone else's shoes from a standpoint of, like, understanding what exactly you are asking of someone and exactly what the kink is, right? So, like, it's, again, it's not as simple as, like, oh, he's just going to give me money. And it's not as simple as, like, oh, I'm just going to make him more panties. So there's a bit of complexity to everything.
That's pretty much all the questions that we have. Is there anything that you kind of think that we missed or anything like that? Right, like, when somebody talks about, like, okay, do they usually want it combined with something else? Like, will you usually say to somebody, you need to send me $250 and then put on women's underwear? Or is it more just kind of confined to, like, send me $250 so I can go out to eat or something like that? Like, do you
It all depends.
Depends on the person.
Like, yeah, it all depends. Like, sometimes it's just standalone, but in that instance, it will be standalone, and sometimes you can or do add an element of humiliation into it, right? And that humiliation can be, like, honestly anything.
Are these people that are doing this, like, are they single? Are they usually in a relationship with somebody else? Like, do you get the sense that these are men with girlfriends, women with girlfriends, etc.?
I think most of the people that I interact with tend to be, at least in, like, the financial domination situation, are single. It does get a little bit weird when they're in relationships, honestly. And some people, some dominatrixes take it in the direction of like, oh, I'm so much hotter than your wife, blah, 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 blah. But like, I also think that's derogatory towards women, and I'm pretty anti anything that's derogatory towards women. So
yeah, that kind of gets into,
that's a no-no for me.
It gets into some,
and that's not a no-no for me. Like, oh my God, how could you ever? But like, I just don't like saying things that are mean towards other women, because I think that we should just sort of keep it towards being mean to people who are doing things for us, who like it when we're mean to them, not to just everyone. And also, like, why drag somebody into this who did not fucking consent to it? Like,
yeah,
it's just enabling bad behavior. Yeah, I had somebody ask me once to like encourage him to like jack off into his wife's coffee without like her permission, and I was like, absolutely not.
That's pretty much all the questions that we have, is like, if people want to learn more about this, if they're interested in being a client, what should they do, that kind of stuff.
My website is rubylovesyou.com. And beware of catfish pretending to be me on basically any website.
I want to thank Ruby so much for joining us. If you want to connect with her, we have linked to her on our social media sites. We're Profoundly Pointless on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. And we've also included her information in the episode description. The YouTube version of this interview will be live on November 16th at 12:30 p.m. Pacific. Okay, now let's bring in John Shull and get to the pointless part of the show. When you left school, do you think that you were ready for real life?
Do I think I could have made it? Yes. Do I think I was ready when I left high school? Absolutely not. And it's kind of a bigger rant for me. However, I don't think they teach common sense and things you need to know in high school. That way, for a person graduating high school, just to be able to get right out and you know, join the world.
I think that you learn how things are supposed to be. I don't think that you learn how things actually are. Nobody like tells you like, look, no, this is how this really works.
Nobody, you know, you don't take a cooking class, I don't think, anymore. You should be able to know how to manage bills and money. The difference between credit and debit and in percentages.
I think, though, that honestly, those kind of things are things that people tried to teach you. You just weren't ever in an age, myself included, to pay any attention to it. Because you had plenty of opportunities to learn those things, right? Like, you could have been with your parents and learned how to cook. Or if you asked them, like, how do you balance a checkbook? I think that you had the opportunity to learn those things. You just didn't do it.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm sure something was said by my economics teacher about APRs and financing. And of course, right? You're a young person. You're just like, oh, that doesn't matter. And then come to find out it does.
Right. You're never able to listen to the things that you're supposed to be paying attention to. It's only like 10 years later that you realize like, oh, I should have probably learned that. I think the biggest thing that I kind of wasn't prepared for was, I had always thought that, okay, the people older than you are going to know what they're talking about. Like, your managers are going to know what they're doing. Hard work is going to get you where you want to go. And, like, none of those things were true. Like, nobody ever told you the truth that, like, look, you're going to be surrounded by people who are in positions of authority, but they're actually idiots. And all this hard work of the American dream, kind of not really true.
And I don't want people to think that we're being hard or you know, or like just having a grim outlook, but it's absolutely true that a lot of times your bosses, at least to start out with when you're a younger person and impressionable, probably aren't going to know as much as you think they do or give you the advice that you think they should give you. But part of that to me is finding yourself, right? However, I think that's different than being in school, graduating, and trying to go into the real world. I've always, having gone through a four-year college, I'm not sure what college really does, to be honest with you. Yeah, it kind of tells you maybe what you're interested in, but I feel like most four-year universities, you can do the same thing and be done in 2 years and start your career?
College, I think, is essentially a personal reference without a person behind it. It's a piece of paper that says you can be trained to do a job. That's what college ultimately is at the end of it. I don't think it's for most professions. I don't think it's about learning how to do the actual ins and outs of anything. I think it's about saying, hey, you now have a piece of paper that says you can be trained how to do another job.
Here you go, $85,000 later. Or I don't even know what college costs for 4 years anymore.
It's probably a $100,000 piece of paper that says, yes, I can be trained. It's essentially somebody signing off on you. That's really all college is. Someone who's signing off on you saying, this person has some level of intelligence. They can take a task and they can complete it. That's all college is. It's not about learning anything.
Yeah, I mean, that's fair to say. I still think that most colleges are money grabs, and it should not cost $150,000 to become a doctor. But what do I know?
Well, yeah, man, that's a whole political rant we can go on for days, right? Like, you set up a system in a certain way. If the whole system is set up to make as much money as possible, everybody's going to try to make as much money as possible.
You know what would be a lot more fun is if the Hunger Games were real and they put like 20 aspiring doctors in an arena, and we're like the last one standing gets an automatic, you know, degree. You don't even have to go to school.
I think that's a terrible idea, because then you're going to be operated on by a doctor who's just the toughest person there. That's a terrible idea. That's arguably one of the worst. No, it's terrible. Like, if you want to apply that to another profession, no, I want somebody who knows what they're doing just about anything. I don't ever want some idiot doing something.
Fine, let's stick 20 bank tellers in an arena then.
Now you're messing with my money. I want somebody who knows what they're doing. This whole idea is a terrible way to do things.
But it would be fun, right? It would be entertaining.
Well, yeah, but can't we just do it with people who don't need to do fundamental aspects of societal things?
People don't have to die. Like, we can just taser them or
I don't care about them living or dying. I don't want them handling my taxes.
Here's a follow-up question for you. So if there was any profession that you think requires school, or coming right out of high school and having known a certain skill set, would it be somebody in the financial industry?
No, I think that's all just a bunch of people essentially legalized gambling. I don't think that anybody in the financial industry really knows what they're doing. Like, picking stocks, I think that's basically just gambling. But I think that you have to have people who know what they're doing, whether that's like a doctor or a carpenter, right? Like, people need to know how they're what they're working on.
Yeah, I mean, once again, anyone can hammer a nail into the floor, but
that's not fucking true. I can't build anything. I couldn't build a damn thing. I have no skills whatsoever.
I mean, listen, I'm not the most skilled person, but I feel like if that was my only job, was to learn how to do stuff like that, then maybe I could do it.
My grandpa always used to say, work with your brain or your back. Pick which one you want to do.
Oh, that's actually a great saying. I thought about that for a half second. I was trying to think of something funny to say, but that's actually
It's a really great saying. And it's not one of those things where, like, you make it up. It's your saying, but you just attribute it to your grandpa because then people will listen to you. Like, that's what he really used to say. It's like, decide early if you want to work with your brain or your back. There's no shame in either one, man. Everybody's got, some of the most important jobs in society are some of the blue-collar jobs, right? Sure. Like, you think plumbing ain't important until you flood your house.
Until you got shit coming out of a valve somewhere that you don't know why that's happening.
Suddenly the plumber's the smartest man in the world. You got to have a guy. Everybody needs to have a guy.
It's a whole other rant, but I've never understood why we seem to demean certain jobs, like a plumber, right? Like, it's always the same picture that they always put out as this big oversized person with their ass crack hanging out, like trying to fix a toilet. Like, I've never seen a plumber like that. And actually, they're very needed and helpful.
It's just all perception, right?
Right, yeah.
I mean, maybe there is some, like, okay, some jobs you could learn how to do, maybe easier than other ones. But I don't think that's necessarily true. I've tried to learn how to do any kind of trade work, and I couldn't put together a desk from IKEA. It's just perception, right? Like, some jobs are perceived as being easier, so they pay less money. Teaching is one of the hardest things you can do. We don't pay educators shit.
Oh, it's listen. We don't go on rants, especially politically motivated ones. But I got to tell you, that is one thing I would campaign for forever. Is teachers need more? I mean, they should be paid a lot more money.
I just have a firm belief to finish this whole conversation up. I just have a firm belief that you are never taught or learn the one thing that you need to actually know or learn. Whatever situation you're in life, you're never taught the one thing that you need to know, or you never learn the one thing that you need to know. And then 10 years later, you're like, man, wish I would have known that. Okay.
All right, let's get some shout outs here. We're going to start off with Eric Ingman, Josh O'Brien, Carl Fear, Davin Garamella. Don't see a lot of Davins usually. Albert Wagland, Austin Smith, Christopher Lewis, Gabrielle Mayer, George Mata, and Anthony Costa. Appreciate all of you. And listen, if you haven't subscribed to our socials, you should check it out because they're pretty awesome. And we're about to hit a couple of milestones on a few of them. So I don't want to jinx it because Nick thinks I jinx everything. But
you do.
If you haven't subscribed, you definitely should. And I know you always kind of give it a shout out anyways to do so. But I'm asking you to. John Mother Effin' Scholl is asking you to this time. Help us out.
Okay, well, I'm watching this subscriber or follower or whatever count you're talking about rack it up. Because you jinx everything and saying, I'm not going to jinx it.
You know what?
And then this is jinxing it.
I tell you
what, you're a jinxer.
I'm going to lead this into my second. You know, I'm going to make this a question. Or you can say a statement. I used to be superstitious, like when I was a younger person. I am not anymore.
I'm not superstitious, but I have a firm belief in the idea that once you try to grab something, it slips away from you. Because I think that once you kind of sit back a little bit and reflect on your success or possible success, you get a little bit lazy. I think that once you kind of acknowledge a possibility as it's ramping up, it slips away from you because you kind of check out a little bit. That's what I think.
So I just watched a show called Bodies on Netflix. You should check it out if you haven't.
Couldn't get into that, actually.
Oh, you actually checked it out, even though it kind of has a horror element to it. A little bit. Not much, but a little bit.
You've got to... Okay, if you start a show, when are you going to back out of it? Like, how far will you get into a show that you're not going to finish before you decide this isn't for me?
I don't, actually. Because I'm one of those people that will spend 2 days trying to figure out if there's a show I want to watch. And I watch all the trailers. I see who's in it. Sometimes I'll read the Wikipedia to see like how it actually ends. And then I'll watch it. Like I'll commit. I do have to tell you, though, that the limited series that are coming out, like Bodies, I think was like 6 episodes or whatever. I think there is going to be a season 2, but whatever. That's so much more appealing to me than like investing my time in like a 20 episode season of something.
I can't imagine myself watching a TV show that has multiple seasons that goes beyond 3 seasons. I can't even imagine it. I pretty much only watch limited series. Like I want this whole thing to be done in 5 episodes or 6 episodes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree. I think it's smart. I think the filmmakers and TV show folks are getting it. You know, quicker results, less attention span, and we'll see what happens. Anyways, what I was getting to originally was one of the characters in there basically says that nothing is by chance. Everything is predetermined. And the older I get, I'm starting to absolutely think that way, that, you know, you're born with certain genetics. You're basically born with the map of your life before you even say a word. And that's why I don't think superstitions are necessarily applicable anymore.
I can kind of see that. I agree with it in the sense that your life is kind of all mapped out for you pretty early on. It's basically a combination of genetics and your environment. And unless you get really lucky, it's pretty easy to see where you're going to kind of end up. You're going to basically be your parents unless something really changes. I kind of think that all people are basically the same. The person at the top would be the person at the bottom if they were faced with the same circumstances and vice versa. I don't think that people are really special. We all would make the same decisions given the same resources and abilities.
Well, I mean, shit, I still think people who are special and wealthy and powerful still aren't special. So it doesn't matter.
Oh, I agree.
All right, couple of things here for you. One, I feel like I had a good intro there, but now I'm just going to ask you a couple of questions.
Okay.
What's the more regrettable tattoo? A full-on, like, just full sleeve, but it's just the black ink. Like, there is, it's just, you know, it's just literally a black sleeve of ink. A forehead tattoo or a tramp stamp?
Oh, a forehead tattoo, dude. I mean, that's a pretty easy answer. Like, that's right on your face. Anything else, you can be hidden up. I would love to know, like, a percentage on what percentage of people regret the tattoos they got.
That's the thing. I feel like, because, you know, you see a lot, like, I'm going to use Jelly Roll as an example, the artist, the singer. The dude has all kinds of face tattoos. And you're telling me that if he loses a lot of weight, he's a bigger guy, like, those aren't going to look fucked up? Or if he gets older, they're just not going to naturally fade and they're going to look terrible?
Face tattoos are really hard things. I look, if tattoos are your thing... They've just never personally been mine, only because I could never think of anything that I really wanted to get. But, like, face tattoo is a big move.
Yeah.
It's a big move.
Yeah, listen, like you said, I'm not hating on you if you have them. Like, good on you. I have to tell you that, not that my opinion matters, but I don't think I've ever seen one, like, a person with a face tattoo, like, on their forehead where I've gone, okay. That's awesome. That's all right. I can see that. It's always like, oh, shit. Like, that's not a good look.
It's kind of crazy that in hindsight, Mike Tyson's face tattoo is probably the best face tattoo.
And that's not saying much, by the way. So
that's just not something I would personally do. I'd like to hear from somebody who's gotten a face tattoo. Like, man, how do you just make that decision? That's a tough one.
All right, second matter of business. Travis Kelce, Taylor Swift. Do you think it's real?
I think that it might be real, but it is the most manufactured PR relationship that I've ever seen. It's weird how all of the cameras just happen to be in exactly the... Like, John and I both worked... John still does. I used to work in news, and I started out as a photographer. And the interesting thing to me about it is you can see that all of these leaked photos or secret photos or filmed photos all suddenly have these perfect eye lines. Like, all of this is staged. It's all played up. Maybe it's real, maybe it's not, but it's certainly a played up thing.
Yeah, it's. I don't think it's real at all. However, I say that because kind of loosely following Taylor Swift's love life for the last two decades... It seems like she really falls head over heels for whoever, and it always ends the same. So I have no faith that this one will be different.
I feel like that's just all public relations.
Could be. Could absolutely be.
She fascinates me in one regard only, and that is a symbol and writes about is a symbol for a life that she has never lived. In the sense that most of her songs are about being kind of your average person in high school. And she was in country music, but I think that she was born to a wealthy family in Philadelphia or New York, never had any country roots, never lived any kind of normal middle-class upbringing. She essentially sings about and portrays a reputation of a life that she has never lived.
Wow, you said that very eloquently.
Yeah, that's very the well. One thing that I don't understand about it, right? It's endlessly singing about a life that you have never lived. It's pandering.
I almost don't even want to continue. I feel like we should just end the show.
We should just stop the whole show? Okay.
All right. Last question. This kind of ties into our top five. I was just wondering this. What is your dream car?
One with four wheels.
That's such a bullshit answer.
I don't care. I could care less about cars. I don't have a single dream car that I've ever thought of. Every time that I have bought a car, I've bought three cars. And in all three circumstances, I went to the dealership and was like, all right, this is the one that I want. Give me the most basic model. Like, well, we have this. Does it have? Don't care. Like, well, you want to get power windows on the truck? No, I can reach right across. I don't have it. I could care less about a car. The only car that I need is a vehicle that has four wheels and gets me to where I'm going. Reliable. A reliable car is my dream car. I could care less.
Why did I just know you were not going to have any kind of interesting answer at all to that?
They're all the same to me. I think that all cars, my wife's car, which is a Toyota Highlander, Prius. To me, it's a Highlander. You're not going to have a Prius with four people. Toyota Highlander is the best car anyone would ever possibly need. Like, you don't need anything in life beyond that. It's, I think it's like $45,000. It has everything you need. I don't think that you need to, I don't think you need anything more than a $45,000 car.
The question wasn't what vehicle is practical, what's good for normal people. It's just you've never once in your life been like, man, I really would love an Aston Martin or a Lamborghini.
No, I have never cared about cars.
Okay. I mean, I don't think you have to care about cars to ever want something luxurious like that. But
nothing, never.
Okay, all right. Well, I mean, you still made it half interesting, but not really. So thank
you. Well, what's your dream car?
I've always wanted a Lamborghini, and I effed up because when I first met my wife in Orlando, she bought me like a Groupon to where you can drive one like around a track somewhere, and for some reason I didn't do it, and. We ended up giving it away to somebody else, like one of her friends or something. So I could have at least gotten in it, probably gone up to 150, 180 miles an hour.
Oh, you could have driven it, not just ridden with somebody else in it?
No, like I mean, from what I understood, I could have driven it. So
wow, you fucked that up.
I did. I mean, obviously my dream would be able to get into a Formula One car, but I'm not even sure I could get my ass in the cockpit of one of those things, let alone be able to drive it successfully. So it's all good.
Look, I think that Formula One has way too many kind of sexual innuendos. To the cockpit, he's in the pole position.
That's all racing, man. That's not just Formula One.
Nobody talks about being in the pole position in NASCAR. He's first. They don't have to class it up with special words. Oh, he's in the pole position. You mean he gets to start first?
Listen, I'm not going to hate on NASCAR. It's to turn left, going 200 miles an hour, you still got to be talented. However, give me cockpits, pole positions. I'll take that all day.
I'm sure you will. I'm sure you will. Are we at our top five, or do you have another one?
No, we're ready to roll.
Okay, literally. So our top five is top five worst car sounds. What's your number five? There's a lot of really bad sounds that a car makes. You're like, oh, I don't want to hear that.
Yeah, I hope us saying these brings back terrible memories for some of you out there. So I'm going to start with my number five, and that is basically slowly hearing the air go out of one of your tires.
Oh.
It is. And you can be driving. You can be feeling the tire up. You can be trying to check it out. But when you just hear that.
Oh, you're fucked.
Oh, you're fucked. And it is. It's so deflating because then your mind just goes to, you know, do I have a spare? Do I have a jack? You know, if you're at the dealership or whatever, it's like, well, then I have to spend $800 on new tires. It's just, it's a terrible, terrible sound.
Oh, yeah. Because that's just like, how much is this going to cost me?
Yeah.
How much is this going to cost me? And it's because just endless complications, too. I got to change a tire, new cars, maybe four new tires. Yeah.
Pro tip out there for all of you who may not have a car yet, tires cost a lot more than you think they do.
Yeah. That's why I buy cheap cars, man. I can go get four new tires for the car I have. It cost me $450.
Yeah, but that's not expensive. But
it's not
bad. But when you're, you know, when you're a young person or even an old person, you don't have that kind of income, and you're like, well, I have to now find $450 so I can drive my car. Like,
tires are expensive, man. But it connects you to the road. You got to be watching out for them. My number five is a seatbelt alarm. It just annoys the crap out of me because I'm gonna put it on. Just let me do it at my pace.
Those are, I mean, they are terrifying. And it's just ding, ding, ding.
Because it just so won't go away. It's like I'm doing something.
Oh, it's terrible. It's by far, that's probably the most annoying, like not hurt, like non-harmless sound in a car, I bet.
I have one higher on the list that I would say is the most annoying non-harmless one. Or not, like, that means something's, like, it's not something bad, necessarily. Like, something's not wrong with the car. What's your number four?
When your air conditioning or heat goes out, and you can just hear the vent just tick, 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 and nothing comes out, and you're like, is there a bomb in my engine? wait, why isn't there any air coming out? Why does it sound like there's a monkey in there just fucking around, you know, just hitting the thing over and over and over again? It's just a shitty sound.
Terrible. Just go 460 air, man.
I don't even know what. Oh, what? Just roll down the windows?
Four windows down at 60 miles an hour. 460 air. You never heard 460 air?
I haven't, no. But it's the worst, man. Because, yeah, I don't have to explain why, but it's just not a good sound to have when you're driving or in a car.
What's the fastest that you will drive with your windows down?
Oh, I mean, trust me. I haven't had any air conditioning in my car ever, actually, since I was in Florida. So, I mean,
wow.
85. I mean, I'll go on the highway with it. It's fine.
I would never. The most I'm going to go is like busy arterial street. I think people know what I'm talking about, right? It's like the main street that's not a highway. Oh, no. I'm not going over 45 with my windows down.
I will say this, though, that somebody commented. I used to have my hand like out the window. And somebody once commented on how bad that made me look. So now I don't put my hand out of the window anymore.
What do you mean your hand out the window? Like how far? Like it's just resting on the windowsill, or like you're sticking it out there? Like you're...
Yeah, you know, like you have it out or you have it hanging over the side of the door.
No.
I know. I get it now. I get it. I don't do it anymore. It was a lesson that needed to be learned, and I learned it.
You just have your hand hanging out the door?
Yeah. You know what? I should have learned after I got stung by two bees within a week doing that, by the way, because I was driving and literally one of them, I mean, this is years ago, but I was driving and I felt something in my arm. I look and there's a damn bee stuck to it going down the road.
Why did you start doing this? What was...
Once again, it's kind of like what we mentioned earlier or what we were talking about earlier. My parents did it. So somewhere in me, I started to do it. And then somebody along the way...
Trying to be cool like Dad.
Well, you know, he probably had a cig in his hand, though. At least he had a reason. I didn't, so.
I did have a truck one time that the door got bent, and I had to climb out the back window. Like I had to get it in and out of the back window of the car. It had, like, a little, I don't know what they call those on a truck, but you had, like, the back window could spread apart.
Yeah.
And I had to get in and out through the back window.
Like on a regular basis?
Oh, yeah. That was the only way in or out.
Jesus Christ.
I'd do what I had to do. Like, I didn't give a shit. It was kind of fun.
All right, all right. What's your
like
number
getting
four?
In like a spy movie, like jumping in the back. My number four is a loud exhaust. I hate a loud exhaust. I can't stand that sound.
So that's actually my number three. I've never driven around with one, but obviously you hear them all over. It's just, there's so many things you can do to mitigate that, and people don't for whatever reason.
I've never understood the idea of like upgrading it just so that this exhaust sounds louder. If you do something to the car that makes it faster or handle better, okay, that's one thing. But just going in there and be like, nah, man, I'm going to pay $100 so this thing sounds twice as loud.
It just makes no sense
at
all.
Makes no sense to me. My number three is the scrape of hitting a curb. Like when you hit it and it's that like, and you everybody like, oh, man. He just checked it.
Dude, we have, so my number two is pulling into a parking spot and like running over the parking block or the curb.
Oh, like hitting it with the front?
Yeah, and then you have to like put it in reverse and it's like, you know, it's so bad. It's so terrible.
I live in a place, Seattle, where there's a good amount of bad drivers. Like a good amount of like, oh my God, that person can't drive. Mm-hmm. Because Seattle used to be pretty bad with traffic, so you wouldn't really get going that fast that much, and I don't think that people were accustomed to that now that the speed has kind of increased and you can move around pretty well. But I saw somebody like pull just flat out turn, completely miss where they were trying to go, like the driveway, and just bash right into the curb and like gung, gung, gung. And then when the car goes up and then like gung, gung. Oh, that's a terrible sound hitting a curb. Is that your number two?
That's my number two, yep.
My number two is when you start the car and it's already started. That like, that's this terrible sound.
That is terrible. That is, or like when you turn it off too soon, like before you put it in park or something on accident, and it's just.
Oh, yeah, like you're still moving and you throw it in park and it just like
yeah, that's terrible, man.
Yeah, that's a bad one.
Or like if you're driving shift and you miss at the clutch or something, or just miss it in general, like, and it just makes that grinding sound.
Do you know how to drive you know how to drive a stick?
Not successfully. I feel like I could. It'd probably take me a half a day to learn. But yeah, I think I could. I know I could.
Okay. So you've never driven one? You don't?
I've tried a couple times.
So then no, you don't.
I think I tried driving your truck one day.
Maybe. Every car I've ever had has been a stick shift.
I'm pretty sure I drove it, and I'm pretty sure I almost – you had to be in it with me. Don't you remember this? I missed the clutch, and we didn't go uphill. We kept going backwards.
Oh, maybe I do remember this.
Or maybe like
drive it.
Maybe you were doing something, and like you asked me to bring you your – I don't remember, but I remember being in your truck and just biffing it in an Orlando parking garage.
Oh, I know what this was. You did me a favor. I was out of town or something like that, and you moved my car. And then somebody else had to do it because you didn't know how to do it.
I'm like, why is this fucking thing going forwards? And it was bad, man. It's not.
There's not a lot of people who can drive stick now. Okay, what's your number one?
Oh, man. Every time this happens, I just – my stomach turns into knots. And that's when the gaslight – comes on.
I could see that as being a number one. My number one is silence, because that means your car is not working. Silence is the worst sound that a car can make.
I appreciate you for that, but no, I used to be so paranoid of the gaslight that when it came on, I got to the nearest gas station no matter what I was doing. Like, you know, because you have, what, like 40 miles? Most cars have 40 miles left
Yeah.
As soon as I would come on, I would book it. Like I was, like, literally going to – the engine was going to die and seize if I didn't get it to the gas station.
Oh, you panicked.
I panicked. I did.
You weren't precautious. You were panicked.
No, yeah. And then I met my wife, and she's like, dude, you're an idiot. Like, it can be on for, like, 40 miles. You have nothing to worry about.
Oh, you didn't know that?
That is something I did not learn until God, I'm going to sound like such a terrible person. I also did not know that the arrow on the gas, you know, the gas gauge tells you which side your gas is on, your fuel tank.
I would make fun of you, but I didn't know that until I was probably in my mid-20s.
Yeah, I mean, that would be me, but, you know, late 20s, 26, 27. I had no idea.
If I remember right, like, I took a picture of it and, like, posted something to social media, and everybody else was like, oh, yeah, idiot. You didn't know that? Like, I thought I had stumbled across some great discovery.
My wife was like, yeah, you've lived 25 years without ever knowing that? How did you ever live?
I had no idea that's what that was. But now I look at it every time and feel smart.
Yeah, well, me too.
Have you ever fully ran out of gas?
Never. And if I ever do, you might as well just hit me with your car, because that means that I've given up on life.
I did one time. One time I completely ran out of gas because I was traveling across the country and I wanted to be like, I wonder how close I can get this down. Like, I can make that. Nope. I didn't make it.
No, you didn't. But you're here to tell the story, so it's good.
Yeah, it's not that big of a deal. The car just kind of sputters out and you like pull over and you're like, well, I guess I'm walking. There we go, walking. It was a long walk.
It's funny.
What's in your honorable mention? There's tons of them, man.
Yeah, I'll name just a couple that grind my gears. Specifically. One is the grinding of your brakes when they're gone.
Oh, yeah. Like, the pads are down. You hear that, like...
Yeah. And you're like, my engine's going. And then you go to the dealership or the mechanic, and they're like, no, actually, your brake pads are just gone. What's more annoying than that, though, is like hitting the brakes and them squealing. That's pretty annoying.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I'll give you that one. I'll put that one up there.
That's bad. Also, this doesn't pertain to everybody at all, but I once had a car that the gas cap, I couldn't get it on. So for like a year, I would drive and it would just hit the side of my car. Tink, tink, tink. That's quite annoying.
I could put on a really specific one in the sense that, God, I just literally forgot what it was. I was saying what it is. Oh, I would put on, okay. I would put on there the sound of your door closing half a second after you realize you left your car keys in the car.
Yeah, that's too.
Where you're like, God dang it.
Well, nowadays when you do that, the vehicle makes a noise. It'll like beep at you that you left the keys in the car.
Oh, I don't have that kind of car.
Well, I know you drive a, I don't know, a Danger Ranger or something.
Drive a Subaru Crosstrek, absolute base model, 22 grand. Great car, by the way.
God, you're such a you're such an outdoorsy guy. A Toyota Highlander, what would you say? Subaru
Crosstrek, baby.
Yeah, same thing. So good for you.
I can drive all over the place with that. I don't appreciate. I don't like the sound of a real car horn honk. Not like a "Hey Jimmy" car horn honk, or like a like an "I'm pissed off" when somebody lays on it. Car alarms. I generally hate the sound of car alarms.
More or less the old school ones. I mean, nowadays, once again, I don't think I've heard a new vehicle, a newer vehicle with an actual car alarm. I don't think I have.
I don't think anybody ever pays attention to them.
No.
Even your own car alarm, you're not running out there being like, "What is it?
What's going on out here?"
Oh, okay. That's going to go ahead and do it for this episode of Profoundly Pointless. I want to thank you so much for joining us. If you get a chance, leave us a quick review. Doesn't have to be some big thing, just a couple of quick words. It really helps out the show. And let us know what you think are some of the worst car sounds. I can't stand loud noises. I hate loud exhaust. And when somebody's just laying on that horn, but I really think that the worst car sound is just nothing at all. Let us know what you think, though, are some of the worst car sounds to hear.